Let's have a prayer, O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Friend Beloved God,
Great
Masters,
of
Self-Realization, Jesus Christ,
Babaji
Krishna,
Lahiri
Mahashai,
Sri
Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda,
Blessed Mother,
Dear David,
Beloved
Saint Francis,
Lovingly
we invoke your presence.
Into this space.
Into my heart and my mind.
Oh beloved Lord.
I offer the flowers of my devotion.
On the altar of my love for thee.
My listening mind waits in silence.
While my soul softly opens in prayer.
To receive your love.
Gradually I am enfolded
in thy arms of everlasting bliss.
Suddenly I realize
I am not this body.
I am not this mind.
I am not this soul.
Thou hast absorbed these
in thy eternal flame.
I am forever
one with thee.
Nothing quite like arriving at Sunday morning again after a few days of rather intense activity. Everything for the good, of course. But nothing quite primes the pump like putting out a ton of energy on the outside to help us to really be ready and really have the inner attunement to desire with everything in us to turn within. And I feel that this morning. Such a natural trajectory that gets set in motion as we put out energy of service in this world. And each one engages in countless little things, many known and many unknown to each other, all as a part of this whole. To go out and make an offering in this community, and to see God in everyone, to make this choice to show up and look for the light in each person. And yet it asks a lot of us. It asks for our time and our energy and our focus, our concentration, to keep being aware of what needs to happen next and the willingness to do it, the enthusiasm to feel good about it. It demands almost all the right attitudes we can think of in order to do it. What a gift that is. And then at the culmination of all that outward service to God, we can release it. And so we come back into a space of just being alone and being inside of ourself again. And so naturally, part of that process is to tune into what's just happened. What did I do well? What do I need to improve upon? Where was my attitude good and centered in God? And where did I come up a little short? How can we serve better? How can we reach people on a deeper level? It's natural to think these thoughts, and when we're sincere and we're here not for ourselves but to serve our neighbors, then we want to do the best that we can. And yet as we go through that process, we find that we so naturally start to also release all of these questions. We have a responsibility to work in the active mind and to use our rational thought and common sense and our feelings in order to make a go through this process of understanding. And we also have a greater responsibility to release all these things. And so Sunday morning, it represents our opportunity to make the great release. And it's like the plunge back into God. And in truth, at this point, the only thought we need think, the only reflection we need to have is, Lord, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy will be done. In thee, make it so in me. Thy will be done. And in this way, as we sincerely embark upon the path of the Lord's will being done, all times and all ways, everything becomes so simple. And we realize we don't have to figure anything out when we turn within. We give everything back to Him. We allow Him to become our thoughts. We allow Him to lift us up, to work out the kinks of tension that we start to take on throughout the body, the restlessness of the mind, which starts to arise through intense externalization and activity. We turn these all back over, and we find our rest in God. We find our happiness in Him and our perfection. I find so often in my own meditation practice, we go through the process of working up the spine, of coming back into our center again, opening the heart, rising through the calmness of the throat center and feeling the medulla open so that the prana can come in. And always it comes back to the forehead. And by God's grace, it's like a trick of magic will happen and my thoughts will just become, thy will be done, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven, thy will be done. And for all of us, no matter what our life is filled with, no matter what we think our dharma is in this world, this path is exactly the same. And when we become internalized again, and when we learn how to dump the body, how to still the mind, and how to surrender our very soul nature back into God's hands. This is His will. This is His will being accomplished. And from this comes all good things, all godliness, all the fruits of a life lived in God. Comes from this alone, none other. And so for us on Sunday morning, let us take this time to rejoice in the simplicity of this, that we lift up our eyes, we rest in the forehead, and we think, your will alone, God. Nothing of me and mine, just thee. And help me be one with thee. When we feel this take us over and we experience this as our own thoughts and our own consciousness, there are truly no words to describe it. There's nothing really to be said. It's just heaven on earth. And God in me, and God in you, and the is this Sabbath morning, so I'd like to ask Peony if she's ready to lead us in some devotion for all of us to just keep this inner focus now of relaxing into God, relaxing this life, and these duties, these ideas of who we are, setting them back on the altar of God's omnipresence. talk from Master, this talk is called How Feelings Mask the Soul. It was given on March 22nd, 1942 in Los Angeles. It begins with the Yoga Sutra. Then the beholder, the soul, is established in its own state. If at this moment you could completely calm your body, your thoughts, and your emotions, you would instantly become aware of your true self, the soul, and your great body of the universe, throbbing with the joy of God. The soul would be established in its own state. Isn't it strange that the joy of God is there, yet you cannot feel it? The reason you do not know his bliss is that you are intoxicated with ego feeling, citta. If I put a screen before me, I will still be here, but you won't see me. Take the screen away and you will see me. So the screen of feelings arise from the ego. Remove the screen through meditation and you will behold the joy of God. Your real nature is calmness, but you have put a mask on of restlessness. The agitated state of your consciousness resulting from the stimuli of feelings. You are not that mask. You are pure, calm spirit. It is time you remember who you are, the blessed soul, a reflection of spirit. Take off the mask of feelings. Face yourself. Whenever you become angry or filled with hate, you don a guise of evil. A person who gets angry enough wants to kill. He doesn't want to, really. That is, his soul doesn't want to. But because the soul has identified itself with feeling, his anger makes him think so. Therefore, it is not good to remain in the ordinary state of human consciousness, subject to such violent emotions. You imprison yourself in various moods, and this is the cause of all your sorrows. To escape, you have to dissolve the feelings and emotions connected with body consciousness, and meditation is the way. So long you have thought of yourself as having certain qualities with their characteristic feelings and emotions. Patanjali says you are masquerading as these passions and desires because you have done it for so many incarnations that you have utterly forgotten your real nature. Once you realize that each day you are only impersonating different characteristics according to your changing feelings, you will not be the same person. You will be able to cast off these delusive states. When you realize that passion and anger are not part of your true nature, these emotions will no longer have any control over you. Every person is innately wonderful. He has only to rid himself of the mask of ego consciousness. Remember that always. If you put a diamond near a black cat, the diamond will reflect black. Can you then say a diamond is black? No. As soon as you remove the black cat and allow light to play on the diamond, It dazzles with its own natural luster. The black cat is your restlessness, which darkens your consciousness with emotions and obscures the light and joy of the soul. The very nature of restlessness is that by the time you are feeling pleasure from one thing, you are already looking for something else. A persistent discontent stirred by feeling. But bliss, the joy of God hidden in your soul, is always new, always constant. Because it gives complete satisfaction, there is no more restlessness in you. I hope you understand the value of what I'm telling you today. It is the freedom from all sorrow. Perfect control of feeling makes you king of yourself. Never be addicted to anything or bound by any habit. Drinking coffee doesn't necessarily mean you are a slave to it, but if you have to have your coffee, then indeed feeling has enslaved you. As soon as you say, "No, I don't need it," let that be the end of your bondage. I never allow anything to bind me. I can eat or drink something enjoyable and then dismiss all desire for it. The thought of it is gone in that instant. Start by not catering to your likes and dislikes, and give that same training to your children. You spoil children when you say, "What would you like to eat? Do you care for spinach? You don't have to eat it if you don't like it." By such indulgence, you make your child a slave of feeling. You may say, "If we do away with our feelings and our likes and dislikes, won't we become like dumb matter, useless to the world? Is that what Patanjali teaches us?" No, he says that when you have mastery of your feelings, you abide in your true state. The true state of the self, the soul, is bliss, wisdom, love, and peace. It is to be happy, that no matter what you are doing, you enjoy it. Isn't that much better than to blunder through the world like a restless demon, unable to find satisfaction in anything? When centered in your true self, you do every task and enjoy all good things with the joy of God. Filled with His intoxicating bliss, you joyfully perform all actions. Many people think that Hindus teach a sort of mental annihilation, the supposed result of the cessation of desire. Yet on the contrary, the goal of Hindu philosophy is permanent bliss. There is no freedom or happiness in ceasing to exist. The very thought of it is painful. A joy that never grows stale is what you want, and that is what Patanjali teaches you can have by becoming established in your true nature. A balanced attitude nurtures soul awareness. Then comes the question, how can we really take interest in anything if we neutralize desires and feelings? You have all seen those who work without any interest in what they are doing. Their work and their attitude show it. They don't care about the result so long as they can say they are doing their job. But the lover works very hard and conscientiously for his beloved. He will do more for the one he loves than he will for himself. This is the way to serve God. And this is how we will feel if we love God. We will work joyously for Him. At one extreme, there are the people who have the idea that to get ahead in life, they must work non-stop like automatons. But the other extreme is just as bad. As soon as these people become interested in spiritual matters, they lose interest in everything else. That is the wrong attitude. It is one reason India lost her freedom. She misused the doctrine of non-attachment. She thought, so what if dirt accumulates in the hermitage? It is all right. Why bother? To do anything about it requires too much concentration on material concerns. Be non-attached. Renounce all material activity possible. Such an attitude hides mental laziness under a cloak of false spirituality. I found that truly great masters are very interested in the world, but without any attachment. When Master Swami Sri Yukteswar was given something nice, he was conscientious about looking after it. But if it was broken, he would only laugh. My care is over. It has taken so much attention. He was truly non-attached. I feel the same way. I appreciate whatever God gives me, but I don't miss it when it's gone. Someone once gave me a beautiful coat and hat, an expensive outfit. Then began my worry. I had to be concerned about not tearing or soiling it. It made me uncomfortable. I said, Lord, why did you give me this bother? One day I was to lecture in Trinity Hall here in Los Angeles. When I arrived at the hall and started to remove my coat, the Lord told me, take away your belongings from the pockets. I did so. When I returned to the cloakroom after my lecture, the coat was gone. I was angry and someone said, never mind, we will get you another coat. I replied, I'm not angry because I lost the coat, but because whoever took it didn't take the hat that goes with it. Don't let your feelings rule you. How can you be happy if you are all the time fussing about your clothes and other possessions? Dress neatly in clean clothes and then forget about them. Clean your house and forget it. Once I was a guest at a very nicely arranged dinner party. I had much enjoyed the dinner, but our hosts were so nervous lest things not go right that it marred the whole affair. Those who are sensitive feel the nervousness, but why worry? Do your best and then relax. Let things go in a natural way rather than force them. Then everyone around you will be relaxed too. Activity is not life. It is the expression of life. But some people are so constantly active that they make themselves miserable, exploding with emotion. The ordinary person is like a pendulum, swinging back and forth from one extreme to another, always moving, always restless. This is little more than an animalistic state. The yogi, on the other hand, is always calm, always centered in his true nature, like a stilled pendulum. When he is active, he can go very fast, but when he stops, he is centered again in inner and outer calmness. So we must learn to work in this world with interest, but to keep relaxed and unattached. I don't know how I could work without joyful enthusiasm. It is natural to have interest. Without it, we have no spring for motivation. So have the utmost interest in doing everything for God. Love Him so much that your greatest pleasure is to work and plan for Him. Doing things for God is a very personal experience. So satisfying. I find such joy in fixing up this building for Him. But when something goes wrong, I am not upset. Not the least bit. Why should I be? I did my best. Yes, I will try to do better, but I won't let adversity disturb my calmness. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Why not? You didn't create this world. God did. Why should you think you live in this world only to please yourself? To live for self is the source of all misery. There was a time when I looked at the flower and enjoyed its fragrance for me and mine. I heard the call of the brook, and it was for me and mine. Now I wake from that dream and I hear it was only for thee and thine. The yogi's thought is always for thee and thine. He says, I am here in this world for only a little time. Why form strong attachments? I don't know why I'm here, but God knows. I'll work for him. I will try to follow not my own will, but what he wants me to do. It was this surrender to the highest wisdom that gave Jesus the strength to say, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. From this, many religionists have the idea that one shouldn't use his will. But if you didn't use your will, you would die. For willpower operates every physical and mental process. It is right to use your will, but with wisdom and direction from God. Otherwise, if you use your will wrongly, you will fall into error and suffer the consequences. Krishna said, those who have mastered their minds become engrossed in infinite wisdom. Their minds thus relinquish all desire to concentrate upon fruits of actions. This ensures freedom and enables them to reach the state which is beyond all misery-making evil. Motive is criterion of right or wrong action. Watch your motives in everything. Both the greedy man and the yogi eat. But would you say that eating is a sin because it is often associated with greed? No, sin lies in the thought, in the motive. The worldly man eats to satisfy his greed, and the yogi eats to keep his body well. There is a lot of difference. Similarly, one man commits murder and is hanged for it. Another man kills many human beings on the battlefield in defense of his country and is given a medal. Again, it is the motive that makes a difference. Moralists make absolute rules, but I am giving you illustrations to show you how you can live in this world of relativity with self-control of feeling, but without being an automaton. Master used to give this example. Suppose someone asks to borrow my nice field glass and assures me he will return it in 15 days. At the end of that time, he does not return it. When I ask him where my glass is, he counsels me, you are a master, yet you are attached to a field glass? I wouldn't loan it to that man again. Another man may ask to borrow the glass, saying he will return it in perfect order. He is kind and thoughtful, takes care of it, and returns it promptly. To him I will loan it any time. It is not that I care that much about the glass, but if something is mine, it is for me to care for in order to keep it serviceful. The second man understood that I was saving the field glass so it could serve others as well as himself. The first man did not understand my motive, so he not only deprived me, but everyone else who could have used it. I didn't want the glass for myself. I was thinking of it for all. Non-attachment gives great inner freedom and happiness. All the things I have cherished most I have given away. I enjoyed them through the joy of others. The joy I get out of whatever I do is impersonal and not for myself. It lies in the joy of God and in making others happy. In India, I used to have a motorcycle. I rode it everywhere, especially to visit my master in his Serampore hermitage. I enjoyed that motorcycle very much. So one day I asked Master, "Am I attached to it?" He knew every tremor of my thought and consciousness. "Certainly not," he said. Shortly after that, I gave the motorcycle away to someone who had a deep desire for it, and I never missed it. That is the kind of freedom Patanjali teaches you to have, so that at all times you are a god, absolute ruler of the kingdom of your consciousness. You let no dark forces enter your portable heaven. Through my mind's iron bars, no evil dares to pry. When you attain freedom from slavery to feeling, you become spiritually sensitive, but are no longer oversensitive to matter. You feel pain, but are untouched by it. You see the world, but know it isn't the ultimate reality. You are above every limitation of body and mind, centered in the calm nature of your soul. But what poor training the world gives us, you can well understand. Either the father is mad and takes it out on the children, or the mother scolds without cause. What an example for the young. What a picture to place before them. It is better not to produce children unless you are willing to give them proper training. By withholding the right kind of discipline, you make them miserable all their lives. They acquire habits that prevent them from being themselves, their true selves. Of course, good habits are friends that help us, and wrong habits influence us to become demons. In the same house, you may find one person tolerating everything with calmness, and another who is all the time boiling with anger or jealousy and other disturbing emotions. If you can always remain calm, isn't that much better? If God got impatient, think what would happen to the world. Fortunately for us, He remains calm. He has perfect control of feeling. One part of Him, His absolute nature, is never restless, even though as Creator He knows what is going on here, because He exists in all. So should we be ever calm in our soul nature, in spite of any turmoil around us. When someone comes to me in a violent state, dancing with anger, I can see that he is suffering. No matter what I would say, he wouldn't understand because of the agitation. But if I have control over myself, I can humor him until I have calmed him and made him receptive to reason. I have never lost that calmness of my soul. If I had lost it, regardless of what excuse my mind might have offered, I would have lost with God. With God, that is where you must win. Inside, you should always be anchored in perfect calmness. When someone comes to you in anger, remain in charge of yourself. I will not lose my temper. I will keep on expressing calmness until his feelings change. Then you are demonstrating perfect control of citta, ego feeling. To have calm feeling doesn't mean you always smile and agree with everyone no matter what they say. That you regard truth, but you don't want to annoy anybody with it. This is going to the extreme. Those who try in this way to please everyone with the desire of getting praise for their good nature don't necessarily have control of feeling. It is good to be pleasant and agreeable if your behavior is sincere. but agreeing with others all the time because you are afraid to speak truth, lest you displease, cannot be called control of feeling. Whoever has control of feeling follows truth, shares that truth wherever he can, and avoids annoying unnecessarily anyone who would not be receptive anyway. He knows when to speak and when to be silent, but he never compromises his own ideals and inner peace. Such a man is a force for great good in this world. The truth is, we have all become like the proverbial prodigal son. We have wandered away in the dark lanes of bad habits and forgotten how to keep the joy of God centered in our heart. When the soul is not in its natural state, it puts on the garb of moods born of human feelings. But if we learn to remain inwardly with the divine, we live and work in the blissful state of our true nature. In ordinary consciousness, we think we are mortal human beings. But when we disengage ourselves from ego, we see we are spirit. Delusion causes us to imagine disease, fears, and all other limiting conditions of the body and mind. Can you imagine that you are not a man or a woman? This is the truth. In the divine joy of the soul, the consciousness of sex is lost entirely. Even in childhood, I used to see that I was apart from my body. I remember one day as a young child when I was in that state of ecstasy and came from my bath unclothed. When my aunt saw me, she slapped me. I didn't realize why she had hit me until she sharply reminded me I had forgotten to put on my dhoti. Nothing God has created is sinful. Man created sin by his wrong thinking and misuse of the potentials God has given him. The ordinary man thinks, I and my body are one. I am so many pounds of flesh, with senses and feelings. But the divine man thinks, I and my Father are one. He sees his body as a motion picture image. The picture on the screen is a product of a beam of light passing through a film. So the divine man sees his body as a product of the creative light of God passing through the film of Maya. He knows he is not the body, that he is one with God's light. An actor forgets he is acting and begins to live the part. We are like that. We have forgotten who we are and that we are only acting out a role on earth. When an individual doesn't remember his omnipresent blissful self, he masquerades in the garb of feeling and thinks himself a human being, limited to the body and subject to suffering and death. See what a terrible transformation takes place. And throughout his whole life, he searches for the happiness of that blissful self, which he already is. The restlessness of the worldly man is such that he never tries to meditate. He never tries to introspect and know himself. To develop the mind is far better than to just work, eat, and sleep as the animals do. But to remain forever on the intellectual plane is also a sin against your true self. For although you may get to the door of realization through the intellect, you don't take the next step and open the door. Spiritual development is beyond the intellect. You can open the door of realization only through deep, daily meditation. What you feel in meditation, you must keep with you all the time. Too often, people meditate half-heartedly as a matter of habit. And as soon as they are finished with the mechanics of meditation, they go back to their old state. You must plumb the depths of peace and joy of meditation, and then hold on to the calm after effects. Then only will you change yourself. The body reacts to the changes of the four transitional periods of the day, the morning around sunrise, noon, evening around sunset, and the night, like midnight. It is very beneficial to meditate during these times. Deep meditation and perfect control of feeling by holding on to the calm after effects of meditation, these lead to samadhi, the ecstasy of self-realization and oneness with God. But the ecstasy of sabbikalpa samadhi, in which you enjoy bliss within but lose external awareness of the body and world, is not enough. What you want is nirvikalpa samadhi, conscious ecstasy. This is the highest state, in which you remain outwardly fully conscious and active, as well as inwardly fully perceptive of your God union. It took me a long time to achieve that supreme level of consciousness. Lahiri Mahashaya and Master used to always be in that state. In nirvikalpa samadhi, you can perform all your duties and face all the tests of life without ever becoming disturbed. Thus, success in meditation is the only answer to the mystery of overcoming the human nature so that the soul can become established in its own state, free from ego-created disturbances of feeling, centered, ever in bliss. some extra meditation time this morning. Master's talk was so holistic and practical. It's really just about applying this in ourselves. To apply it than sitting in the stillness together, each one going on alone inside of themselves, exploring what is it to keep my mind completely focused on God, what is it to feel uplifted in His Spirit, knowing that only I can embark on this inner adventure. Only I can choose to focus in this way and to surrender myself completely. We can be inspired by one another and by the masters, but at the end of the day, what each of us is called to do is to own our spiritual life and to face ourselves, like Master said. And we do this by becoming still and working through and beyond everything that comes up, by staying awake and ready, not just falling asleep into the subconscious, but to stay awake and present with God for the inner unfoldment, the inner adventure with Him, so that He can clean us up. He can make us whole. We do this also in truth throughout the day. Master said, our good habits are our friends, and the bad ones are restless demons. And isn't that the truth? And for each of us, we can reflect on all of our habits that make us what we think to be ourselves, and how we do things, how mindfully we do things with God in mind. And this is meditation also. This week I had the experience, as I do, of putting many dishes away, and at one point was unloading the dish rack for the 44th time and putting things in the Tupperware drawer away. And had a moment, a little flash of frustration as I saw the state of the Tupperware drawer. The organization, which myself and perhaps a few others have tried to maintain, had completely been abandoned. And not only that, as I went back to reorganize it, I found that there were at least 5 Tupperwares that didn't even have lids in the cupboard. How this can be, I wonder. How is this even possible? Now, I'm not saying this to be mad at any individual. I really want to know how this is possible. And then I imagine what it's like to carry Tupperwares out of this house without their lids. And I think, who can do this? What kind of restless demon came into my kitchen and stole my Tupperware? Stole my Tupperware lid and left the Tupperware behind? That's a restless demon if I've ever heard of one. For all of us, we need to take our time in our activities in life. And to do things with God truly, that means being aware of what we're doing and how we're doing it. I could go one cupboard over and the drawer above it and talk to you about the lid drawer. And how 3 times a week I go to put a lid back in the lid drawer. And I can't just put the lid in the box that it matches with, because I start to do it and I realize there's 5 other lids that don't belong in that bin, and I have to put them back in the bins they belong into. And I think, what kind of restless demon got a hold of my lids? Started putting them all in random lid bins As if there wasn't any organization at all in this lid drawer. It all is pretty mundane, isn't it? And yet this is our life in God, and I tell you this truly, that how you put your lids away and how you steal the Tupperware lids from the Tupperware cabinet, this is how we love God, actually. And as we go about our day's activities and we get into the restless demon mode, and we do things without being aware or present, we move further from our own source. We move further from the God in us. And so when we sit down that night, we have to work that much harder to get back to that sense of self, to that calm self that is living in the eternal now. And we have to go through the whole process of shedding layers to get back into that space with God. But it needn't be. Because in truth, as often as we're able to stay present, to do things slowly and thoughtfully, and to run when we need to run, and to work hard when we need to work hard. Like Master said, it's not about avoiding this life or thinking we're above it. There's enough of that kind of spiritual bypassing in this world, where we have separated our own life from the idea of being spiritual. We need to integrate our life and our love for God completely. And so that means in everything that we do, we look for that opportunity to be a little more present and a little more aware, to keep aware of our breath as we do it, to not just start breathing like a banshee as soon as we get activated and involved with the world, but to stay centered. To tune into the whole of what's happening, and to how to integrate others into that whole. Not out of some sense of myself being the doer and figuring it out, but just out of being simple. Out of just seeing things clearly. We do this by being in the meditative state all the time. And it's not easy, it's the hardest thing. But it really is the only thing worth aspiring towards. And this is that state that Master speaks of, that highest samadhi, when there's no separation anymore. And so this is something we all need to understand is our task every day, is that no matter how many times we forget, we get sucked onto the roller coaster of emotions, of upsets, of feeling unworthy or of feeling indignant, all of the infinite core of us that can take us over on any moment, no matter how many times it happens, we step back into our center. We practice calm joy, acceptance for whatever is, because it all is that way in God. And we step into it with an awareness of, how can I help? What is trying to happen here? This is to say, Thy will be done, Lord. Or Shri Ram Jai Ram, victory to God. In all things, in everything I do, victory to you. And I really value Shri Ram Jai Ram, because whereas Thy will be done is almost a prayer, we associate that with Christ saying, Thy will be done, Lord. At the moment of not being able to do it himself, it's that surrender. And yet in Ram Nam, there is this kind of perpetual knowing. Thy will is always being done. That victory is always in motion. Can I remember it? Can I hold on to it? Can I Ram Nam in my heart, in my soul? In my mind right now, can I Ram Nam? And it's not an external thing. It's a consciousness. It's knowing that everything rests in the palm of God's hand. And His victory is always happening when we are able to treat life in such a way, when we're able to have that kind of relationship to life itself, that kind of realization all the time. That is Ram Nam. That is the word of God in everything all the time. such simple syllables, such a simple mantra, with the greatest and most profound meaning in life, which is just God's victory here and now in everything always. God's victory. And so, for all of us, we embark on this adventure every single day. And we're here to help each other, to remind each other, often not with words, but just by quietly putting the lids back where they belong in the little bins that they've been organized into. Could say the same thing for the measuring spoons. I imagine every drawer and cabinet in that kitchen right behind us. Everyone. It's the same thing. We just do the little things in God all the time. And we find so much joy in that. We find the solution to everything in that. So let us never lose our understanding that in this moment is victory to God. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, but right now is that victory. So Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, victory to God, victory to the light that is your life lived in God. I'd like to request Bhima to play us a tune if he feels inspired to do so.
Jai Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
allowed to focus on all those whom God places within it. Feeling the joy of this practice, the closeness of each your relationships with God, as He places souls in your midst, to feel your oneness with them, to see them healthy and whole. Of His presence. Feeling God's love in your own heart. Sending this out to these souls. Let's pray together, Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art in all your children.
Thou art in all your children.
Thou art in these souls.
Thou art in these souls.
Manifest your loving presence.
Manifest your loving presence.
In these bodies, minds, and souls.
In these bodies, minds, and souls.